So my name is Amy Speaker, as was mentioned, and I work as an MCH epidemiologist in Wyoming. And today I'm going to talk a little bit about how we use concept mapping in Wyoming to help us determine our MCH priorities. And my colleagues Carrie Olmsted and Ashley Busacker, who's the CDC assignee to Wyoming, were instrumental in this work, and it was very much a collaboration. So I'm sure many of you have recently come out of Title V needs assessment work, but I will talk a little bit about it for those that aren't as familiar with the process. So the needs assessment is a requirement of every state to receive the MCH block grant funding through Title V. The needs assessment requires that each state take a comprehensive look at the needs and strengths of its MCH population in the state. And the goal of the needs assessment is to determine the priority areas for work for the subsequent 5 years. And Wyoming really focused this needs assessment cycle on getting community input and really incorporating the transformation that's been happening with MCH 3.0. So the internal staff at MCH, at the Department of Health, decided to form a planning group to get the process all kicked off way back in, I think, 2013, it felt like anyway. And the group was determined to start by taking a broad look at the needs of the community. This involved starting with gathering input from communities through community meetings, a survey of our partners, and then collecting MCH indicators from a lot of the national sources that you all are familiar with. And then we developed teams of stakeholders and internal and external stakeholders to narrow and refine the priorities as we kind of worked down the funnel, as it became commonly known in our office, to the final priorities that we have today. So that first process there of data gathering were these three types of sources. So we did community meetings that were selected to be held in randomly in nine of our 23 counties. There were 13 sites overall that were held mostly in the county seats, and we had over 150 participants in these community meetings. And in these meetings, we asked about the successes and challenges, barriers to health in the four populations we looked at, which were women and infants, children, adolescents, and children and youth with special health care needs. From the meetings, we were able to do some qualitative analysis of the responses in terms of phrase frequencies and common themes, and we were able to put that in the kind of category of potential priorities. In the second phase of kind of data collection for us, we did a partner survey, which was sent to 142 partners that had statewide interests in the state. We felt pretty good about the 85 responses that we got for a 60% response rate. And in the survey, we asked the same open-ended questions as in the community meetings about the same four populations. But then we also asked them to talk about and rank our current priorities and whether they were relevant or felt that they should be continued. And then also the straw measures that MCHB had put out so that we could get some feeling about how to incorporate those into our needs assessment process. And then finally, we were also able to get some information about whether they wanted to participate in that process as stakeholders to help us narrow those growing number of potential priorities to our final priorities. And then lastly, we were able to use indicators from the national priorities, MCH 3.0, the current Wyoming state priorities, the preconception health and life course indicators that were developed by AMCHIP, and indicators that had been used in the previous Wyoming needs assessment to kind of fill out and round out the total list of potential priorities, which rang in at a whopping 300. So that seemed kind of overwhelming. The internal planning group did make an initial pass to attempt to reduce this number and kind of really focus in on what are the tasks of MCH at the state level, but we still ended up with over 150. So the question was, how does our epidemiology staff synthesize such a large quantity of data for staff and stakeholders to be able to use and not be overwhelmed by, so that they can select the MCH priorities for Wyoming? So thankfully, we stumbled upon a process called concept mapping. Concept mapping is a process that is often used in the social sciences, and we were able to follow the version and modify a little bit as we went from Dr. William Tokum at Cornell, and this is really kind of how we modified and used his as a framework. And it really allowed us to use a regimented set of tools to group similar indicators together, basically. And we did this process for each of our three populations, excuse me. We used women and infants, children and adolescents, and used children and youth with special health care needs within each of those populations. So the first step of concept mapping is to structure the statements. For this, we grouped each of the indicators by population. So as I said, we went through this by population so that we could have those similar themes. So when we say that we grouped by population the indicators, what we mean is we actually put all of them on paper and cut them out and gave them to our Title V director, epidemiology staff, CSH staff, and program managers. So we ended up having seven people for each of the populations organize and sort how the piles best fit together for them. And this hypothetical sort is what you can see on the right side there. And this may look like 5 and 8 could be breastfeeding initiation and duration maybe, and somebody felt that those should be grouped together. And 6, 2, 1, and 9 might be infant mortality, preterm delivery, low birth weight, and small for gestational age. So that's kind of how that would look, and everybody did that individually without any kind of guidance. And then the similarity matrices were just a grid kind of representation of how everybody did ranked or sorted their indicators. So here you can see that 5 and 8 were sorted together on the left or on the right, and then the 1 indicates on the matrix that they were sorted together. So all seven of the similarity matrices that represented each individual's grouping and sorting were then summed, and then the inverse of those were taken to get the distance matrices. And this is the example from the women and infant population group. And the more the two topics were grouped together, the lower distance between the two topics. So for example, when you look at access to care, and access to care specifically transportation-related access to care, you can see that all seven respondents grouped them together, and the distance between the two is zero. On the opposite end of the spectrum, you can see that nobody grouped adequate care and alcohol use together, and so the distance between those two indicators is 7. So the next part of the concept mapping process was to visually represent these distance matrices. And for this process, we used multidimensional scaling to visualize the level of similarity between the individual indicators in each population. And MDS relies on the distance matrices basically to determine how close those should be to each other on a visual representation. And the MDS process can be done with as many dimensions as you're willing to play with. We chose to use 2 dimensions for simplicity's sake and also for communication with our stakeholders and the visual representation on an XY plane. So this is an example of the women and infant map. And so again, the topics that are similar to each other are grouped together. So up in the upper corner here, you can see breastfeeding intentionality, duration, obesity, nutrition are all kind of grouped together, meaning that they got grouped together by the 7 people most of the time. And also in the bottom, you can see mostly substance use, alcohol use, illicit drug use all got grouped together again in the bottom there. So the next piece of this is, well, how do you go from here and say where those lines should be and what should be and shouldn't be grouped together and how many groups should I have? Well, I don't know. So you could argue about this, I think, for quite a while, which we maybe did. Or you could go on to the interpretation of the maps using a cluster analysis. And cluster analysis is just a way that the objects that are similar can be grouped together. And we used a hierarchical cluster analysis. There are many types out there. But this one, basically what it does is we started with as many clusters as there were statements. So I think in this one there were something like 70 statements. So everything starts with its own cluster. And then one by one at each iteration, they get clustered together until at the end there's one cluster. So again, that's then the task is to determine where to stop clustering and where do you have the right number. And so just as a visual representation here, I know that you can't really see the left, but you can see kind of how things are continuing to get grouped together. So on the left are all of the indicators that were used in that women and infant group, and then each grouping is demarcated by a grouping of the tree. So to help us kind of determine where to stop clustering and where to be satisfied with the number that we had, we used three statistics. And the first one is the Cubic Clustering Criterion, CCC. And basically it compares the observed R-squared to the expected R-squared. The pseudo F captures kind of how tightly clustered things are. So it looks at the ratio of the mean of the sum of squares between groups and the mean of the sum of squares within the groups. And then the pseudo T test captures the separation between the two clusters that were most recently joined. So our results were that in our women and infant population, we ended up with 6 clusters. In our child population, we had also 6 clusters. And our adolescent, we had 7 clusters. But as you can see here, the values of each of those statistics that I just talked about kind of vary widely and can be somewhat open to interpretation. So just as a description of the way that we were able to kind of determine where to draw those cut points, we should look for a CCC of 2 or 3. That indicates a good number of clusters. But 0 to 2, they could be potential clusters. And then the pseudo F should be relatively large. Your guess is as good as mine on relatively large. And then the T squared should be markedly larger than the previous value. So definitely open to some interpretation, but we do feel like we met and satisfied those to kind of help us guide in that process of determining what the correct number for us was. And just to show you kind of an example of how those clusterings worked out, so these are 3 of the 6 clusters that were determined for the women and infant population. So you can see in the first cluster, there's a lot about access to care, insurance, social determinants of health. In the second cluster, nutrition, breastfeeding, physical activity. The third cluster, our mental health and substance use. So. You might think that these would be easy to get to without this kind of process, but it really is helpful and it really takes in a lot of input. So, and that is kind of the conclusion that we drew, is that Wyoming concept mapping provided us a framework to move forward on how to synthesize the needs of our population. It provided an objective way to incorporate feedback from a variety of stakeholders, and our program staff was able to buy in because of the visualization of each of the steps, and they had direct participation in the outcomes. So I know you guys were all dying to see what our priorities are. So these were the final priorities of the needs assessment process, and we're going to be continuing to go from here for the next 5 years. One of the other great things about this process is, so I'm going to take the second one there, promote preventive and quality care for children and adolescents, is that we were able to retain many of the individual indicators that drove us to this priority. So we can kind of look at, as we go forward with strategic planning, initiatives that address these specific indicators to forward that priority. There were several limitations to this process, including its time-intensive and multi-step nature. And although we could have visually show all of the steps, The program staff kind of got used to calling it Epi Magic, about how we got from one step to the next, which I think they were okay with, but also being able to explain is helpful. And finally, as we mentioned earlier, there are many ways to interpret those statistics. There were several times we were like, well, maybe we should have 14 clusters, or maybe we should have 16 clusters. And just trying to decide where those cut points were, I think if you got six epidemiologists in a room, you would have maybe six different answers on the number of clusters. But it still was helpful in moving us forward at that time. So some of the lessons learned from this process is at the beginning, those individual indicators that we ended up with, they were great, but we did have kind of a variety that were incorporated together. So we had some things like baby-friendly hospitals mixed in with breastfeeding initiation, and we also had some programs, like our vision screening program got put in the mix. So sometimes things were hard to decide how to group together, and I think that would have maybe made it easier for our program staff to group similar indices or types of measures together. And then the other thing is, we are trying to balance the explanation of the process with actually getting what individuals think, because the whole point is to concatenate all that information from the different people and see how it turns out. So we did want to tell them what we were doing, but not give them too explicit of directions, so that really what they believed could be incorporated into the process. And then finally, we wanted to be flexible. The concept mapping process really gave us a framework to move forward, but we did a couple of things where we dropped a couple of aspects of it so that we could be flexible and maintain our commitment to the needs assessment process, and maybe not using the ranking pieces or some of the other pieces that are also part of this process. So the final part of concept mapping is utilization. So this is our final process, and we are currently working with our stakeholders that helped us get here to put together our strategic plan and strategies to move forward for the next 5 years. So if you have any questions, I would be happy to take them. Yes?
I have a question. You said you randomly selected the community.
Yes.
And then so my question is, how does that potentially account for the disparities among the minorities in the state of Wyoming?
Well, thankfully, we selected randomly based on a few things. So we sorted them by rural, urban, and frontier status. And then we also looked at the county health rankings and looked at county. So we wanted to make sure we had a representation from the highest. We did it in thirds. The highest scoring communities, the lowest, and then the middle. So we also wanted geographic representation of the large state, so that we had the four quadrants of the state. So we kind of randomly selected within each of those things. And then luckily for us, the county with the reservation was selected, so we were able to do community meetings at both the Northern Arapaho, Eastern Shoshone, and the county seat in that county.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get from the clusters to the priorities?
many more steps. Not many more steps, but several more steps. So we ended up with the clusters. I'm going to show you my funnel again. So the clusters were kind of a way to get us to that second bar, which was the planning group and steering group. So we had the planning group come together, which was, again, for each of the populations, so the child, adolescent, and women and infant groups. And we presented data around each of them and were able to score on whether it was MCH responsibility, whether there was political will, feasibility, kind of all of those things, whether there was a life course perspective disparity, some of those pieces. And then we were able to take those and move to the working group we were able to take what the planning group and steering group had done to the working group. The working group then scored to get us to these preliminary priorities that were not what was presented here. The clusters were the direct results of the analysis. And then what that analysis was presented to the working group, and they scored to give us kind of a short list. And that short list was then given back to the planning group and the steering group for final kind of edits, tweaks in terms of naming conventions and the real cutting some of the priorities. I know we had some that really scored low in the working group, and we decided to just cut them. So that was kind of multiple iterations of additional scoring that happened after that. Sorry if that wasn't very clear. I have it all written up. I can share that process with you as well.
Was there any consideration of the evaluation from your prior set of Title V priority indicators, like from the previous maybe 5 years or however long ago it was, that might have influenced or helped influence everything you just said?
Probably. At certain points when we scored and when we cut originally, we did take into account whether something was a current priority for the division and whether it was a current priority for the department. So we didn't want to see those things cut immediately. We wanted to have some opportunity to do some evaluation on them and present them and then have the stakeholder input on them. And that was how we treated the straw measures from Maternal and Child Health Bureau as well. We didn't want to see those cut before we had the opportunity to kind of explain them and why they were important. Mm-hmm.
5 years from now, would you do it this way again?
Wow, someone said that I would get that question. you know, I think with the process, I think we could do it again this way, and I think it was beneficial. I think with turnover rates in MCH that we sometimes see, I think it really does make everyone feel like they have a vested interest, and I think it really brought us to a solid standing with our program staff that we all agree on these priorities. So yes, I think I would do this again with the minor tweaks of the list that we go in with would maybe be a little bit different.
How did you condense all of that illicit drug use, alcohol, binge drinking? How did that get verbalized into a narrative in the end?
Did
you have your priorities?
Yes.
How did you translate that?
So with the way that it was presented to the working group, each of those individual indicators was presented for each population. So for illicit drug use, we looked at adolescent drug use, we looked at maternal drug use, we looked at women of reproductive age. So each of those indicators was presented, and then we were able to kind of take their scores on those individual things and move forward with those that they found important and tell the narrative from there. So that is one of our next steps, though, is to actually put together issue briefs and kind of tell the story, just like you're saying, of all the priorities. So hopefully those will be to come in the next 6 months.
Thank you all for great questions. And if you have more, hopefully you'll have a little time if you can.